shall we say, the working class issues in this whole phantasmagoria mess that we are in.
Well, if we don't address the working class issues, we won't get workers back.
And we won't win.
We can't win without workers. I mean, you know, the Democratic Party is supposed to be a workers' party.
Well, and
I'm not going to argue with you about whether it is or not, but it's supposed to be a workers' party.
It certainly needs to be more of one. If there's only going to be two parties, then one of them needs to be a little more
unabashedly,
a little more working class than it is.
Okay? Unabashedly working class. Unabashedly.
Well,
like John and me.
I don't know whether that's possible, but I would like one that was like in which we had at least enough power to veto, you know, stupid stuff.
Right.
And maybe even propose some ideas forward that
and we
would get a hearing at the top
we
level.
We would have enough people to stop stupid stuff. We would.
You know, that's the number one. And austerity is the number one stupid thing that's going on.
Absolutely. You think it doesn't affect you, small businessmen? Austerity is costing you money every damn day. You know why? If people ain't got money, they can't spend it in the hardware store or at the Tasty Breeze or Tasty Queen or whatever it is. People don't have money. They can't spend it in local businesses. They can't even spend it in your redneck bar, buddy.
Where'd that what bar would that be now?
Well, I ain't saying. You know, in Tennessee, we used to call those redneck bars, if they had music, we called them honky-tonks.
Of course, in Virginia, they were private clubs because we had for years, we had a dry state, and each county could, if they wished, open. They could change it a little bit.
Do you know how many sermons my old man preached on liquor by the drink?
As opposed to drinking the whole bottle?
As opposed to liquor in a brown bag. That's why they call them package stores.
Sure, yeah. Well, I know in Charlottesville, when I was going to school there, you had to go and ring a little buzzer. It had to be a private club.
Gotcha.
You would go in, and then you could... And there was something about bringing your own setup or something like that you could do.
So you could get a mixed drink.
Yeah, right.
Hey, why don't we go ahead and start this show?
Okay, what do you want me to play, buddy?
Good morning, ladies. Why don't we start with Stevie Ray Vaughan? You got Raining Down in Texas or Flooding Down in Texas?
I actually do have that.
This is one of the greatest blues guitarists of all time, the now deceased but still wonderful Stevie Ray Vaughan of Southeast Texas.
Okay, our question is, are we playing? Thank you for that introduction.
Stevie Ray Vaughan!
John, what happened to the output here? Going out to the... I'm not hearing it. Okay, guys, we're going to have a second start to the program here in a second. This is, typical of why is...
Just go ahead. If you can
iTunes
get it together, just play
stopped.
It, and I'll start again Stevie Ray Vaughan.
iTunes somehow just stopped doing its thing. And,
yeah, you know, and don't it make you crazy?
It make me feel, I don't know. Maybe I'm not. Am I plugged in? Everything's plugged in, right? We got, I had the wrong one on, or did I? No, that's the right one.
Turn them both on, John.
Well, lately I've had to, reset things occasionally. So that's what we're doing right
this
now.
This is live.
We are, we are on the air right
this
now.
This is Stuart Acuff. Hey, while you're looking for that, John, why don't I get to some news?
Okay, do some news, yes.
Yeah, because last night was a great night. The women leaders and men, but mostly women leaders of the resistance in Jefferson County met at the Shepherdstown Huddle last night. My good friends were there. Susan Pipes chaired the meeting, and Cheryl Kemp was there, and just great women leaders who've done such a great job. Looks like we're going to take on next the federal budget and the attempt to cut food stamps. And they now call it the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. brother Steve Shatkin brought some interesting research to the table. He said that food stamps calculates, or the U.S. Department of Agriculture calculates how much you're, how many food stamps you're going to be able to use at $1.29 per meal per person. That's a pretty, those are pretty narrow pickings. I'd expect if you're going to live on $1.29 per meal per person, you're going to eat a lot of rice and beans. Maybe a little bit of andouille sausage cooked in with the beans, but not much. We're going to be tackling... we're going to be tackling the federal budget with Alex Mooney, the right-winger member of Congress from our area here in the Eastern Panhandle, and with Senator Capito, and of course with Senator Manchin. Although we understand Senator Manchin's going to be with us and good on the budget. So it's going to be coming down, to these lying, backstabbing Republicans. I don't know if I'll ever get over the fact that Shelley Moore Capito released a statement about how she was opposed to cutting Medicaid and had her staff come and meet with us and assure us of that. And then she turned her vote around 5 days later.
Twice.
I want to salute all the folks, activists in the resistance movement, in Vigilance, and West Virginia Women's March, and
Progressive Confluence.
The Progressive Confluence, the Coalition to Protect Democracy, and on and on and on, because we are winning. We are winning. We have stymied Rump at almost every turn. Not every turn, but almost every turn. And Axios, this brand new media concern in Washington, D.C., released this yesterday. In terms of Rump's losses, Speaker Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell are going their own way on tax reform. Hill sources believe Trump's original targets, including a 15% corporate rate, are dead. Secretary of Defense Mattis didn't immediately embrace his full ban on transgender troops, and in fact, Mattis has held off the ban pending a study.
Mattis has made an interesting statement I heard reported in the Times actually yesterday, where he says that there's two parts to being to making America great again, and one of them is freedom from fear, right, of intimidation. And he's telling the soldiers that he's addressing this to, you're there to do that. He said the other is inspiration. We got to work on that one.
Ain't it the truth?
Now, that was another really interesting.
Mattis, now that's twice that Mattis has defied the president. The first time with the transgender ban, and then the president went forward, and now this, demanding a study.
Well, I think he also was one of the ones that insisted that our recently resigned butthead there, Beavis, what's his
right.
name, Steve Bannon,
right.
Was.
Well, that was
thrown off NSA, you know.
I think that was Mattis and then Kelly, right? The Justice Department won't drop the Russia probe. Courts won't allow his full Muslim ban. Mexico, how many times can Mexico say, we ain't paying for your damn wall? And yesterday they said it was a matter of national pride and security and national dignity. The Senate won't pass his promised health care reform. Gary Cohn and Secretary of State Tillerson won't tolerate his Charlottesville response. North Korea won't heed his warnings. China doesn't fear his trade threat. CEOs won't sit on his councils, and Mexico and Canada won't bend to his will on NAFTA. The sumbitch is losing every day. He is not winning, and he's not beating. I saw this morning, John. Now we're going to get into this Houston.
No, you're being so petty. And, you're next thing you're going to be saying, you're going to be saying Melania's heels are too high.
They were too damn high. Who ever heard of wearing stiletto stripper heels to a damn flood? Those were stripper heels. Those were me pumps. Oomph me pumps.
Oomph.
Oomph. Oomph.
That's a metaphor?
That's sort of a metaphor.
It's a euphemism.
Euphemism is sort of a radio bleep. Oomph me pumps.
Really.
Our listeners are smart enough and sophisticated enough. They know what we're talking about. John, have you queued up any music?
We're ready now. We're ready now for Stevie Ray.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, genius blues guitarist from Southeast Texas. Morning, brothers and sisters. This is Stuart Acuff and Resistance Radio this morning on enlightenradio.org. It's great to have y'all with us. This morning, we're going to do something different than what the president did yesterday. Because, you know, the president went to Texas, not to Houston. He went to Texas, though, South Texas, over near Corpus Christi.
And then they went to Austin after that or something. They had some meeting with the relief officials. But
he brought Melania, and she was wearing her 5-inch stripper spikes.
I ain't going to knock Melania because, I mean, I think that she made a bad bargain. I mean, I think she got roped into something that was not part of the deal, you know, in the beginning. But anyway, she's a good-looking woman. She really is. And I haven't actually heard her say a bunch of stuff at all, really. I mean, she seems to be to shut up in public, basically. And that's probably for the best. And she hasn't done much to stifle these rumors that she actually detests her husband. Which may or may not be true, but I mean, she's done nothing to, you know, she, it's not like she's getting out there, well, that's not true, I just love him so much.
No, she's not.
She hadn't been doing that, you know,
so we don't know. Yesterday, she looked quite the fool in her stripper spikes, and
maybe he demanded.
Baby,
I want you to wear
to the core.
I want you to wear that, and you know, please, you know, no underwear, okay?
But he went. I guess to try to bring warmth and comfort and security and hope to the people who've been flooded out, who've lost in some cases everything they ever had in their homes, who don't know where and how and if they'll ever be able to rebuild because they don't have flood insurance. Only 15% of the people along the South Texas Gulf Coast have flood insurance. And people who don't know what tomorrow brings and where they turn and how they start over. And they're thinking about going to wherever they grew up. They're thinking about where they can work. They're thinking about what kind of environment they want to raise their children in. And the president comes to address them hungry for hope. And the president says, what a great crowd. What a great crowd. I know y'all came to see me. What a great crowd.
Texans always make it. They stand up and get. Doesn't matter what it is, the Texans are going to be better.
Didn't say a damn word to sympathize. Empathy or the solidarity of the rest of the people of the United States.
Stuart, I want to know if I can make a controversial proposal here.
Okay.
Now, following this disaster, if there is a following, I mean, so far the storm isn't leaving, okay? But following this disaster, there's going to be, this is probably going to be, could be the biggest recovery effort in the history of the United States since one of the wars we fought anyway.
Right.
I'm not sure even what that could encompass. There'll be a big call, no doubt, just like there was in New Orleans, to rebuild the city of Houston, a great city, the fourth largest U.S. Right. city. And of course, the problem with the rebuilding is that the distribution of rebuilding funds will inevitably through the kinds of contracts to fix various this's and that's and houses and insurance company. I mean, the lion's share of whatever is reserved for the thing will be eaten up by interest that actually did not drown.
Right.
Okay.
And did not suffer.
And did not suffer. Because that's just the way that it crumbles cookie-wise, as Shirley MacLaine famous said in The Apartment.
Right.
Now, a better proposal in my mind is to do nothing to rebuild Houston and write everybody a great big check. And they can wander where they will, okay? I'm wondering now that the question is that may in fact leave Houston devastated for another 50 years. On the other hand, I'm arguing that would be a solution that would be actually the most equitable, perhaps with the least fuss and discriminatory edges of any.
John, that ain't going to happen. This is the United States of America. We're not there yet.
Okay.
And one of the things we want to do this morning is celebrate what Houston is without saying people have to come back or people have to leave. That's all going to get worked out. But right now, I just want to honor the beauty of a tough working class city, its culture and its people. John, you may not know, there are five or six distinct cultural subgroups in
The only time I stayed in Houston was for a I went to Houston to attend some no I went twice I went once to the 1968 SDS convention, which was held in Houston. Actually it was held in Dallas, but we ended up relocating it to Houston for weird reasons. And then the other time was I went there to stay with a friend overnight, and that's when I was sleeping on a waterbed on the porch, and there were lizards all over the screens.
That's Houston.
That was Houston. Yeah. That's my experience.
They're also
in Houston.
2-inch-long flying roaches. So the five distinct cultures which make Houston in so many ways so wonderful, interesting, diverse, a mix of music and food and neighborhoods. I used to live in the Houston Heights, spent 3 years there organizing healthcare workers across Southeast Texas. And I came to love these different cultures, which included traditional Mexican Americans. When I say traditional, Tejanos, some people in Texas call themselves Tejanos. There was a time when we called people Chicanos, Latino Americans, Mexican Americans. These are folks who never immigrated from Mexico, whose families have been there in Texas since there were people in that part of the country. And then there are, of course, the Latino immigrants from not only Mexico, but from Honduras and Guatemala and Nicaragua and El Salvador. Then there's the huge Asian community, particularly from Southeast Asia, the Hmongs, the Vietnamese, that community. And a lot of those folks are along the Gulf, and a lot of those folks operate fishing vessels.
You know, when I was in Maine, there was a huge KKK sort of outburst that took place in Augusta, Maine. Lewiston, Maine, over the fact that five Hmong families were going to be relocated to the air. And these people were putting out things. Oh, your throats are going to be slit in your bed. Okay,
right.
It's basically their propaganda. But you know, the labor movement there came out very strong against that. And it was one of the great things that they did. They had a good guy that was French Canadian that was running the labor movement there. I remember that. But the Hmong family. So actually, and of course, they turned out to be like everybody else.
Everybody else trying to make a living for their families.
That's right.
Then there are Creole people, which we often think of as people from Louisiana, from New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana. And these are people whose descendants go back to the Spanish and the French in New Orleans and intermarrying with African Americans. And one of the ways we get the term Creole is from the Haitian Creoles who immigrated to New Orleans and were part of that polyglot. And then we get African Americans in a totally different culture, and then we get the white Southern working class, which can be a little bit further split down to people whose roots after the mid 19th century. So. Right after the Civil War, were from Czechoslovakia and Eastern Europe and Southern Europe, but particularly Czechoslovakia. In fact, when I lived in the Houston Heights, my next door neighbor was a Texas Czech man, and he was old, and he was determined he was going to get me to join his social club, and.
You know, I've had three great friends from Texas, and one was from Port Arthur, you know, and one was from Laredo, way out on the other side of the state, okay, and another one was from El Paso, okay, and they were all, you know, well, the guy from Laredo and El Paso, they could relate to each other, you know, pretty much. There was kind of... Mm-hmm. You know, everybody went way back. The families that had been there went way back, were ranchers all the way back, and they were, you know, like they all were looked like characters out of Lonesome Dove. If you talk to them about their families and stuff like that, right? And that's one of the reasons why that novel by Larry McMurtry was so great, because it just captured perfectly, really much all the weird things about the backgrounds of those people, you know.
Right.
And
it's a fascinating...
But it's different. Totally different than Houston. Houston is like so different, you know. Yeah.
It's a fascinating state that way. Houston could not be any more different than Austin, could not be any more different than Dallas, could not be any more different than Fort Worth. But probably the most diverse of all of them is Houston, and it's one of the most diverse cities in America. If you can find it, John, why don't we play a little Buckwheat Zydeco? This is a Creole man playing a traditional Creole style of music called Zydeco. And it, here we go. What we got, John?
It's called Hey Ma Petit Filet.
Ah, yeah. Turn it up. I didn't get any increase in volume, John.
It's going through.
Have you got all the knobs turned? That's all right. Don't worry about it. I'm getting it in my earphones. It's just not as loud as I thought it would be. Oh, there you go. That's fine. Thanks. Et toi. There we go. Ma dieu, ma dieu, Sounds good, man.
All right. Yeah, let's
Can we do Clifton Chenier next?
Oh, yes, we can.
All right. Ah, et toi. Et puis ça, c'est bon. Ah. Petit Jean-Fier. Petit Fier. That's a little girl in Creole, y'all.
Oh, that was
it. Yeah. That's a washboard and an accordion. This is the blending of the blues and the Czechs. They got the accordion from the Czechs. Zydeco's real name was Stanley Durall. He's passed on. He used to tour with a pet raccoon. A coon that sat on his shoulder during his shows. I probably saw Buckwheat probably half a dozen times before he passed on. In Houston. In those Creole church gymnasiums, Creole Catholic church gymnasiums, where they would hold dances every Saturday night to raise money for the church. And they were Zydeco dances because the parishioners were Creole people.
Everybody feeling all right?
Everybody feeling all right?
You know, Guy Clark said, you know, he had to give, one of the reasons he gave up touring was is that he kept wanting to take his dog with him. He didn't want to tour without his dog, but his dog had, you know, problems later in life, and people on the bus objected to the
dog farts.
Putting up with the dog.
Okay. To the dog farts.
Well, at the least, you know.
Right.
Anyway,
we're going to change over to Clifton Chenier.
You want to go straight into that?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
This is Clifton Chenier, y'all. This is the founder of Zydeco Music.
All right, there we go.
I saw him one time before he passed on. Go ahead, John.
There we go. Ooh, here he comes.
Well, bonjour.
Bonjour, man.
This is a recording taken off a record. Interesting. Yeah.
Took a charge of codec.
You know, it might have been at one of those churches.
I speak French too, see, but it's a different language, so.
I'm
Clifton Chenier. This is my brother, Cleveland Chenier. This is my drummer, Robert Said Jr.
It's all French names, y'all.
This is my guitar player, Paul Senegal. And we also have Jumpin' Joe Morris on bass.
Always got to be a jumpin' somebody. Either on the bass or the harp.
They call me the Black Cajun Frenchman.
Jambalaya done the real way.
Well, you can tell the different recording levels of some of these songs.
Yeah.
You know.
And on this, you'll hear an organ. That's from the Black Church.
Yeah.
Son of a gun, we're gonna have it for the Lord if I am. I'll be fine.
Lots of Cajun places in Houston.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. A lot of the African-American women I organized, and we set the record when I was there leading organizing in Texas. We set the national record for the most successive NLRB election victories with 12.
Yeah.
And most of those women were Creole women. Tough people. Tough people. Son of gun, gonna have big fun on the bayou.
Noticed it or not yet, but we have a new production unit in our studio that allows now
another board
offline production, you know.
And, that's great.
So we can
the studio at the little Red Caboose.
That's right, the Red Caboose studio here in Bolivar, West Virginia.
Bolivar, West Virginia, in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, broadcasting across the pan. Y'all, that was Clifton Chenier. Let me talk a little bit about that music. That's Clifton Chenier. Before him was Buckwheat Zydeco, whose birth name was Stanley Doral. That is the music of the Creole people of New Orleans, Southeast Louisiana, and East Texas. I was saying during the song that when I was there leading the SEIU organizing, we set the record, the national record, for the most consecutive union election victories back in the early and mid 80s. That was a long, long time ago.
Yeah, man, that was it's really just it's been a hard crunch since then, right?
It's been a tough crunch. But a lot of the people we organized were Creole people. And it'd be funny. You could go in a little town to organize the healthcare workers there. And there'd be two families, and you'd get to know everybody in town because you were organizing the best place that black women could go for work, right? Which wasn't very damn good, but it was someplace you could go. And so you got to know everybody, and there'd be two families in town, and they'd look just alike. Same skin tone, same depth of color. Same hair, same facial features, and they'd have the same name, Fontenot, or Bro, or Willette, and yet one family would be considered black, and one family would be considered white.
Interesting, yeah.
And the Cajun people were the ones considered white. And they had their own style of music, which was country music mixed with the Czech accordion, played with the Czech accordion. And then you'd have the African American people, the black people who were Creole people too. But two distinct cultures and two distinct understandings of your place in the world. Just like my my own family. I've said this many times to you, John. My mother's grandmother was the first person in her family to pass for white in West Tennessee. So there's a lot of that I used to say.
Yeah.
You know, you remember the old Southern term for race mixing when they didn't say race mixing? Miscegenation.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
I used to say that the best argument for miscegenation was walking the streets of New Orleans.
Probably. You know, well,
yes, Lord.
The
et toi.
See, I mean, the I remember watching a debate one time between a segregationist and a reverend. His name was Reverend Kirkpatrick. Man, he could sing. Wow. You know, anyway, in the old civil rights days, and he would, one of his, you know, rebuttals to, because the segregation would say, oh, well, you have everybody intermarrying, we'll have mud people.
Right.
That's like an old Klan thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
And Reverend Kirkpatrick says, no, 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 instead of three colors, you're going to have 1,000.
Ain't it the truth?
So I mean, and that's the deeper truth, right? Right. I mean, there you go. I mean,
and so,
you
know, so we're gonna slow it back down and go to the root of this music, the country blues, the blues that came out of the field hollers and the church songs and the work songs, the blues, the root of all American music, and this is one of the masters of the Texas country blues, Lightnin' Hopkins out of Center, Texas. I know more about Center.
Baby, please don't go.
Baby, please don't go, y'all.
This is from the Ash Grove, Los Angeles, California.
Great.
About 1967.
Yeah, that's when white people were getting interested in the blues. John Lee Hooker and Lightnin' Hopkins got out of poverty because of that.
Now, baby, please don't go. Now, baby, please don't go. Now, baby, please don't go back in your Orleans. You know I love you so, baby, please.
Country where life is better. Don't go back to the sinful city.
What'd you say, guitar? Said yourself. Right.
You know, people like Lightnin' Hopkins used to play across rural East Texas and West Louisiana in places called little bars called juke joints.
I be a man and gone.
And people would gather and dance.
He left the county for me, had his shackles on, that baby.
Had his shackles
on.
Don't
go, baby, you just got to go take me with you when you go.
There's a track where Lightnin' talks about the revolution in country music, and I said, well, what did you mean by that? And he says, well, he got to a place, a club, and they had actually a separate microphone for your guitar.
That's what they said.
That changed everything, he says. I thought he was playing better joints, you know.
That's a good story.
And I hollered out one more time.
So those juke joints would be open 6 nights a week. And one night a week they'd have live music. One night a week they'd have live music.
Yeah.
And the other nights they'd just have a jukebox, hence the name Juke Joint. And they were wooden floor, raised off the ground by about a foot in case of flooding. Wooden sides, wooden floor, you know, lots of beer, tin beer things on the outside.
Yeah.
And I worked with a man named James Hester from Navasota, Texas. And James was this huge African-American man, had been president of his steelworkers local.
Yeah.
And when we went to organize the black women in a little town, we go check in to the Best Western. That was the best hotel in those little towns.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
There was one in every little town. We go check in, and then we would go to the Juke Joint. And not to meet the women, but to meet their husbands and boyfriends. Hopefully not their husbands and boyfriends at the same time. And we'd go sit down, and I'd put some money in the jukebox, and James, we'd go sit down at a table where there were some men, and James would start talking about how these employers done people bad, and especially black women, and how the union was there to get it right, and, you know, get up a little conversation, mm-hmm. and finally, you know, somebody said, well, I know so-and-so, his wife works there, or mm-hmm. his girlfriend, or blah, 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 and hell, you know, in 2 days, you'd have a list of every employee, starting with that juke joint, and Lightnin' Hopkins used to play those.
That's interesting,
joints.
Yeah, especially knowing that the husbands and boyfriends are going to be there. That's interesting,
right? Yeah. Well, that's who you were looking for.
Yeah,
right.
In that case, yeah, sure, yeah. That you know, if you were going to start a fight at home, it was a lot harder. I mean, I knew so. You know, that was a big deal organizing women workers in the 70s. I know because we ran into that in Silicon Valley and in Western Massachusetts actually too, in the electronics. Trying to organize electronics workers, which was not easy, okay? And mainly, I mean, not only because of just the aspects of the industry, but also, you know, women, you know, a lot of times to join the union, you know, or become especially become active, you know, they get in a fight with their husband or their parent or something like they're living with, you know.
I mean, for the women that I've organized over the years, people get both a collective and a personal empowerment. Many women are able to take control of their lives. They're able to leave abusive relationships. They develop strengths of solidarity, but they also develop a strength in their own soul, in their own being.
But a lot of times their husbands can perceive that as a union is going to tear apart my little kingdom here, okay, you know? And
but the money, they're looking for the money, man, let me just tell you. The men are looking
I saw it play both ways. But what my original point was is that I thought that's a great idea, and that I think, you know, making it so that, especially if you're organizing women workers, you take some time to, you know, get to know their families, okay, and, you know, and their partners, okay, because, look, I mean, those were the days when starting to live on two incomes was getting wider and wider spread, right?
Yeah.
Then, I mean, it had always been there for the poor, but...
In these communities, it was,
you know,
it was two incomes. You couldn't even start.
But I saw in Western Mass, you know, it was starting to expand. It was more and more. All the factories before this electronics factory was set up were men, most mm-hmm. overwhelmingly, okay? Mm-hmm. And that changed, and so now, well, you could see how that could have an impact on families, right? Plus, both positive and, in some cases, especially if it's a union campaign. I'm relying upon your wage, baby, you know, to come in, and then all of a sudden you might go on strike, and oh, my God, and
right.
You'll get blackballed, never hired again, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, a union will hire you, and then they'll ship you to California, and that'll be the last I see of you.
It's been tough for a long time. Workers in America have never had the right to organize. It is part of why it is the most important reason the fact that workers in America have never had the absolute right to organize in violation of the United Nations Charter of Rights. In violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, workers in America have never had the right to form unions free of intimidation, termination, and just pounding from their employers. So it's always been tough, and it was tough in East Texas. John, can you find, to jump it up a little bit after this conversation, can you find ZZ Top? ZZ Top is from Houston. All three guys are from Houston. I've asked John to play one of two songs from their first album, Tres Hombres. I used to eat at their restaurant. They didn't own it, but all three guys had spent a lot of time at this restaurant. It was called Leo's. It was a Mexican restaurant, a little seamy.
Yeah.
A little ragged at the cuffs. ZZ Top, they're not the greatest musicians in the world, but they are sure raw, and they're all the way Houston. This is Houston rock and roll / Houston blues, white boy blues. Which song you got?
Waiting for the bus.
Oh, all right.
Jesus just left Chicago.
Oh, yes, he did. Mercy now.
Been waiting for the bus all day.
I do love this medley.
Have mercy. Been waiting for the bus all day. I got my brown paper bag in my
Dusty packed up tight. The bridge, John. I think Jesus just left Chicago. They're fixing to tell us.
New Orleans.
This is just a twist of the 12 bar blues, but it's a nice version, yeah.
Yeah.
Working from one end to the other, and all points in between.
As my mama would have said, this is gut bucket blues.
Look at that, through Mississippi. Well, muddy water turned to wine.
You listen to Voices of Houston, Texas here today on Resistance Radio.
Resistance Radio, a salute to Houston.
Yeah.
This is ZZ Top from Houston.
Then out to California, through the pines and the pines.
They do break it down, don't they, John?
It's a good one. I like this one.
Amazing how much music they get out of a bass and a guitar.
Well, they're both good, so.
Yeah.
But that's a straightforward 12-bar blues, so it's like, it's interesting. It really ramped it up.
Still talking about Jesus.
You might not see him in person.
I hope my son Sam listens to this today.
You don't have to worry about taking care of business as his name.
We want to respect Southeast Texas, not shower contempt on them. Our hearts are hurting for the people in Southeast Texas, in Houston, Beaumont, Port Arthur, Orange, Corpus Christi. That's why we dedicated this show to Houston, its people, and its culture. You know, one of the great things about Houston, John, and if I'd like to, when we get ready to get out of here, I'd like to get out of here with Nancy Griffith, if that's okay with you.
Yeah,
yeah. We got a few minutes before we got to get out of here, but I think that would be a good way to end. And
now, she's from West Texas.
Right.
Okay, but right. Yeah, okay.
No, she's not from Southeast Texas, but she played a lot in Houston. I used to live in a neighborhood called the Houston Heights, which was a working class neighborhood. I wrote a poem about it 2 days ago. I'll read it sometime, but not today. We don't really have time for me to find it and read it today. The Houston Heights had two great clubs, one of them in the neighborhood called Fitzgerald's, and the other one just outside the neighborhood called Rockefeller's. And Rockefeller's was in an old bank building, hence the name Rockefeller's. And they had great music. I saw Delbert McClinton there maybe half a dozen times. I saw the Fabulous Thunderbirds there before they made it, when they were just a rock and blues band from Fort Worth. And, of course, they featured Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother, Jimmy Ray Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other place was called, and they had all kinds of blues acts there. I think I saw Willie Dixon there. The other place was called Fitzgerald's. And they were funkier. than Rockefeller's. It was an old dance hall, a classic old dance hall, sort of like a juke joint, but about 10 times the size. And I saw Jerry Jeff Walker there probably 10 times. Uh-huh. I saw
Mr. Bojangles.
Mr. Bojangles. Buckwheat Zydeco there probably 5 times, and as well as in those Catholic churches in South Houston. And
they put on a good show, Zydeco.
Oh, man.
I saw them at a music festival, and then and they were better than I thought they were going to be. And then even from the records, really great band.
It's such great music, and you have to be a musician to play it. You know, it ain't garage band music. I mean, you've got to be a damn good musician to play it. You're talking about a guy like Buckwheat Zydeco, plays the accordion, can play the organ, and sings. Did. Unfortunately, he's passed on. But you ought to go out. You don't have to go out. Just turn over to wherever you buy your music from and order you some Clifton Chenier. His family could use the royalties and order some Buckwheat Zydeco. His family
could
use the royalties. Right.
You know, I'll be living in Houston, man.
Especially.
Help out your blues man and from Texas, and you'll be, you're probably getting a resident of Houston there. So,
listen, thanks to everybody who's listening. I know folks in Virginia are listening. I know folks in North Carolina are listening. I know folks across the Eastern Panhandle are listening. Thanks to my friends Cheryl Kemp and Susan Pipes, who last night at the Resistance meeting when I announced this show said, "Oh, you got to tune in. It's a great show." And when Aaron Scheinberg's communications director came to our meeting last night, and I said, "I need to get Aaron on my show," and she said, "Sure." And the women from the Resistance said, "You got to go on. This radio station is the best thing happening." That's it. EnlightenRadio.org.
This
is Resistance Radio every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Please be with us next week, and we're going out with Nancy Griffith. Thank you, John. Appreciate you very much.
All right, buddy. Here we go. Southbound Train. How about that one? There we go.
It's a great one.
I'm sitting on a southbound train, staring at the sky. I'm thinking of my childhood, and I'm trying not to cry. While a stranger sleeps against me, and it feels like I'm his wife. The towns and cities flutter past like the pages of my It's heavy as can be. I wish that I could find someone who would carry it for me, just to pay it some attention and to handle it with care, because it has been dropped and is in need of some. the autumn chill. Maybe it's the rain. Maybe I should wake the stranger and ask him his name. But my eyes, they would betray me, and my words could not defend. No, I must learn to wait my turn before I love again. Some things I know, some things I guess, some things I wish that I could learn to express. And I remember your voice and the sound of goodbye.
You can charge your money, Flick. You can charge your codec. Well, you know, I speak French too, see, but it's a different language, so. I'm Clifton Chenier. This is my brother, Cleveland Chenier. This is my drummer, Robert Said Jr. This is my guitar player, Paul Senegal. And we also have Jumpin' Joe Morris on bass. They call me the Black Cajun Frenchman.